I'm testing this thing up, Dan.
Yeah.
Oh, my tile's been pinned.
Yeah, that was me. I didn't mean to do that.
Oh, my God. It says that I can see it's a dent. Dan, that is, has pinned your tile.
Where's your video?
I don't want. I got no video.
Why?
Whoop.
You've gone.
Hello.
Is that what? Can you hear me at all?
Distantly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Well, welcome to How Did It Come to This, where those who don't remember history are doomed to listen to us. Sitting next to me is a woman who is real.
Hey!
It's Siobhan Doherty. Sitting in another location, it's a man who is a pal, a Stein. It's James Tuckwell.
Hey!
Hi, James.
How are you?
Oh, he's here.
Ooh, sounds so close.
All right, this week, creating a nation always comes with pitfalls. The end of the colonial era gave many the opportunity for self-determination and some the opportunity to come back. But what happens when you try to reinstate a state when people are already living there? How do you tell someone their home no longer is their home? How did Palestine become Israel? Can there ever be a two-state solution? What is a Knesset? Where is the Gaza Strip in the West Bank? What's a Camp David? Why have we been called terrible? And ultimately, how did it come to this?
Oh, you included our feedback in there.
Well, I thought let's do like correspondence corner.
Okay.
We had some correspondence.
From John Smith.
John Smith, I think didn't want to reveal his real name.
No.
It felt like dubious. A throwaway Facebook account to me is what it felt like.
Yes.
And he sent a message that simply said, "This is terrible."
That hurt my feelings, John.
A little bit.
Also, I'm like, have we made it? We're starting to
getting light. Hate mail.
Yes.
Oh, how good.
Yes. So good.
How good. I
mean,
if you're listening, John, I'm sorry that it was terrible. I'm not exactly sure what was terrible. He didn't elaborate on.
No. But
what he found terrible.
Give us some specific feedback,
we can try and improve what we did that was terrible.
We're always looking to improve.
Yeah, we're teachers. We can take it.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. We take it every day.
We give it out all the time. I also had some other correspondence asking for. So they said to me, "Oh, Daniel, you went into like why the Muslims believe that like Jerusalem's a big deal. Could you explain like the other things too?"
Right.
So I was like, "Oh, yes."
Other things like the Jews and the Christians.
Jews and the Christians. Yeah. So I thought, okay, I went into a little bit with the Jews. So let me just quickly run through the three reasons why the Jews, the Christians, and the Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
Believe that Jerusalem is a holy city.
Mm-hmm.
So for the Jews, the Temple Mount, which we talked a little bit about, where the temple was built,
mm-hmm.
So the first temple, most historians agree, was built there. Then it was destroyed by the Babylonians. Then they built the second temple,
mm-hmm.
which was destroyed by the Romans.
Mm-hmm.
So they believe that, you know, that's the site where God instructed them to build the temple.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're into eschatology, which is a big word for the end times,
uh-huh.
In the Jewish end times, that is where the third temple will be built.
Right.
And the Messiah will come back uh-huh. and save them.
This is where I feel bad for Jews. Like the Messiah hasn't come yet.
No,
and
not
I'm,
for them.
I'm like, oh, no. That must be like hard to deal
so
with.
So quick religious lesson for those who also don't know is that so for Christians, the Messiah has come.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Jesus. Mm-hmm. And so for us, it is about, again, end times,
mm-hmm.
Is supposed to be where Jesus will come back to and set up the new Jerusalem. Right.
Yeah.
That's part of
2.0.
Yep. And then for Muslims, I kind of went into that quite a bit last week, but Well, actually, 4 weeks ago. Sorry.
I know. Yes. Yes.
But yeah, that's where, like I said, where Muhammad ascended to heaven. Mm. So that's the three.
Yeah.
Big.
Yeah.
Kind of and reasons why.
Point of it all is that they fight over it.
And they do fight over it. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So our news article for this week. This is from The Guardian. This is from yesterday, which is the 18th of the 3rd. And this was written by Jason Burke. And it's headlined, "Fierce clashes between IDF and Hamas after Israel takes control of key hospital. Fierce fighting has continued around Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City as Israeli troops battled Hamas militants after seizing control of the strategically situated medical complex in an early morning raid. Witnesses reported multiple airstrikes and ferocious firefights as fears rose for the safety of hundreds of civilians in the immediate vicinity of the hospital. Israeli military officials said troops were continuing precise operations in the Shifa hospital to thwart terrorism and had killed 20 Hamas militants there, including Faik Mabou, whom they identified as the head of the operations directorate of Hamas's internal security, and at least 80 people were detained by the Israeli forces and one soldier killed in the raid. The raid was based on intelligence information indicating the use of the hospital by senior Hamas terrorists to command attacks, Israeli officials said."
Yeah. All right. I don't really want to get into that too much because it's too sad. So let's go back to let's just delve back.
Let's go back. So in the end of last episode, we got to kind of the creation of
we got to around World War II. We briefly touched on the Holocaust.
Yes.
Should we touch on that? Are we going to go back there?
Oh, I mean, we can go back there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should probably go back there a little bit.
Yeah, let's go back there a little bit.
So we're going to go back. Ready? Here we go. Woo. All right, we've jumped in our DeLorean and
headed back.
Yeah.
Where are we in time?
Well, if we're going to talk Holocaust, we're talking
1945.
Yeah.
Do we want to? Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So, what would you like to say about the Holocaust, Siobhan? Have you got something?
Well, I mean, I guess the whole the event of the Holocaust provides the impetus for the world to build a state where Jews can live in safety.
Yes.
And so it's obviously, you know, horrific event that resulted in the deaths of more than 6 million people. Where the word genocide comes from.
Yes.
It is really important because it does provide that, like I said, that impetus for the international community to get together, because during, I think there was that during the World War II, there was internationally not many countries did much to help the Jews by providing, you know, places for them to go.
Yeah.
And I think there was probably some collective guilt around that when the full extent of the atrocities became clear. And I think that's still alive today.
Yeah.
And it's part of why maybe Israel has been allowed to get away with some of the stuff that maybe another country would have been called out on earlier. I don't know. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
I think that's probably a fair assessment. I think as far as in modern times, if we're talking the 20th century, it was like the first time that we had something happen on a scale that was so horrific that we all just kind of went, oh, we let that happen, didn't we? Like, as a world community.
And it also is part of what makes it very difficult to talk about this conflict as well, I think, because the word genocide is starting to be used for what's happening to the Palestinian people. People again still feel that guilt about the Holocaust. So it's like, okay, Israel's doing this to Palestine now, but then that was done to them in World War II. And so is it right? Well, is it understandable? Is it justifiable? Is it like all these questions, and it's very uncomfortable to talk about.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. So I guess we can move forward to then the creation of the State of Israel.
Yeah. So Actually, can you start on that? Because
I've lost my spot. No worries. So obviously the United Nations was created in the wake of the destruction of the League of Nations at the end of World War II as an international community that was designed to prevent a conflict like that from happening again. Mm. And one of the first things they did was to the creation of the State of Israel in November 1947 through Resolution 181, which was also known as the Partition Resolution. The idea of that was that there would be two states living side by side.
And I looked at the map for that.
Yeah.
And it's like, ooh.
Yeah. If you go back to it, and so part of the Israeli justification for all of the conflict that's happened since is that, you know, we were happy to accept Resolution 181, but the Arabs weren't, and because immediately they declared war, and there was the first Arab-Israeli war from 1948 onwards, which was Palestinian Arabs, Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, all waging war on the very newly established Israel, which would have been very confronting for them, having just come through what they've just come through.
Yes.
That's part of the justification. They're like, we would have accepted this resolution, but the Arabs never did. And had they, then maybe it would have all been very different.
I mean, if you do get a chance to have a look at the map for that, I recommend anyone listening go and have a look, because to me it's one of those, because I often use a map when I talk about World War II and the end of World War I. I often use a map of Germany being divided up. And, you know, there's like a separate bit of Germany way off up in Poland.
Yes.
And you're like, well, of course they didn't. Like, of course they were angry and they wanted to reunify that bit back to themselves. Like, this map is kind of like that. There's like patches of Israel, patches of Palestine.
Yeah.
Like, it's very strange. It's a strange map, strange borders, and I couldn't really find out why they did that in that way.
And realistically, even had the Palestinian Arabs accepted it, it would not have worked in reality.
I don't think so. No. And for those reasons, you know, they would have been separate and you would have had to have crossed Israel to get to Palestine from another part of Palestine.
Yeah.
Like, it would have just been
a logistical nightmare.
It would have been definitely.
So anyway, it never happened because United Arab
Egypt, Lebanon, Jordan and Syria.
I also had Saudi Arabia. They sent some forces. I didn't think they fought in there. They sent soldiers. There was obviously fighting. 750,000 Palestinians were displaced, and it resulted in a ceasefire in February 49, where Israel gained land from that original plan. Egypt retained the Gaza Strip. Jordan retained the West Bank. And those borders actually held until 67, which I thought was interesting.
Yes.
That's quite a long time.
It is quite a long time.
In when we're looking at like this little snapshot. So, and one really important theme that I sort of got as I was reading all of this, that it's, you know, you're reading Arab-Israeli conflict and you're looking at the tensions of the era, but it's important to remember the broader global context of the Cold War as we're looking at this.
And the thing that I found interesting too, so at the initial creation and during the war of 1948, Soviet Union are on Israel's side.
Yeah.
And then they flip.
They change. Yeah. Interesting, because America's always supported Israel from the very, very beginning. Was it just that they're like, oh, we don't want to be on the same side as America? Or did they think they had more to gain by supporting the Arab side of it?
There was, I read something and now I can't remember where I saw that. I didn't go into it too much, but there was something to do with.
We've got our fact checker here today. He can do some reading. We missed you last time, James.
I think what happened was everyone was kind of like, create Israel, good.
Yeah.
And then everyone, so when the United Arabian countries kind of invade, everyone was like, no, we haven't even finalized what's going on yet. What are you doing? And the Soviets were included in that. So the UN were all like, whoa, what are you doing? And of course, their argument was, well, Britain's gone. Their mandate's done.
Yeah.
And
Power vacuum?
There's power vacuum. Yeah. And they said the Palestinians don't want it.
Yeah, they
don't want it.
Yeah.
Israel, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're like, well, we're just.
Which was not true.
We're just taking back control.
Yes. For them. Okay. Yeah.
Was their argument.
Mm.
And then so the Soviets after that, I think it's an ideological flip where right. it's like America
yeah.
are backing Israel.
Yeah. So we.
So
yeah.
we'll.
Yeah. Interesting because they're not really about self-determination for like Eastern Europeans. But
no, but I think they also don't like it was, I think it's a very much a security council, UN Security Council kind of thing where it's like, we're not going to allow America unilateral
power
things
in this
here.
Area.
We're just going to oppose
yeah.
them on.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. No, I just, I'm not sure that I thought of it through that lens before until I was like doing some research on this. And I was like, it's important. Like, obviously, the backers have their own agenda here. And so, yeah. And that has a big outcome on these, like, these conflicts. And to an extent, they're almost little Cold War proxy wars that are yeah. going on. Yeah. 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 So, yeah. Then we can fast forward, I think, to the second Arab-Israeli war, the Suez. Crisis.
The Suez Crisis yep. in 1956.
Yeah.
So Britain and France really wanted the Suez back, which we talked about in our Suez episode.
We did. I did have little flashbacks to that episode. go back and listen if you haven't heard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. and so Britain and France basically try to get the Suez Canal back and Israel are like, well, we'll get in on that action.
Yes.
And join that and they attack the Arabian Peninsula,
yes,
the Sinai
yeah,
Peninsula.
They're really after the Sinai Peninsula, yeah.
Which they get.
Yeah, yeah. I was interested. There are many names for this conflict. So it's the Suez Crisis or the Second Arab-Israeli War or the Sinai War is what it's called in Israel
yeah.
or the Tripartite Aggression is what it's yeah. called in the Arab world.
Yeah.
And I just sort of like the historiography of like
conflicts
like
conflict.
That. Yeah,
yeah, yeah,
when there are so many yeah. sides and, involved. So
I think so interestingly, so Israel get the Sinai Peninsula.
They do.
Britain and France let Egypt keep the Suez.
Yes. Were they just not doing very well? And so they're like, well, we just don't have the.
It was the Egyptians nationalized. They nationalized it.
Yeah.
And then I think everyone, all the UN was like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah. Guys, 10 years out
this.
Of like, yeah.
And then Egypt basically scrambling to stop a like colonial takeover again.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're like, well, how about if we let you police
the
waters,
traffic, yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And we guarantee Israel will get access.
Yeah.
Like that was basically.
Yeah.
So basically international access was agreed to
yeah.
to the Suez Canal.
Yeah.
So Egypt gave that and gave up the Sinai
it's
in order to stop the conflict.
Yeah. An interesting case study on what diplomacy can achieve, I think.
Yeah.
Like it could have gotten very out of control. But
it could have. Yeah.
Because I think people, the will was to, well, and the Suez is so like economically vital. And so there's the acknowledgement that like economically this would be a disaster for all of us if it
yes.
continues and
yes.
gets out of control. But yeah, it's yeah, just an interesting look at how talking can de-escalate
yeah.
conflict.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Who would have thought?
Who would have thought it? Yeah. So the big takeaway of that was that Israel got to keep the Sinai Peninsula,
yes.
I think. And,
yes.
And so they're expanding territorially
yep.
in the region.
Which will come back to bite them.
Yes. Yes, I think so. And like, because as I was looking at all of this as well and, you know, got through the next couple of conflicts, I'm like, what's happening with the Palestinians here? And there's really not a lot. They're just trying to, at this stage, get acknowledgement that they exist in this area.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Have
yeah.
the right to their own land.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think that takes us to the Six-Day War.
Yeah. In 67.
Yeah. The third Arab-Israeli War.
Yes. Now, from what I could gather, the start of this war is very like, you were doing this and you were doing that and so like how did this even start? Well, from what I could tell,
yep.
there were reports that Israel were amassing troops ready to invade Syria. I think I'm right in saying that.
Oh, okay. All right. I've written preemptive attack on Egypt?
Well, so they were, no, so
okay, go.
From what I can tell, it was they were amassing troops to invade Syria, was the report.
Mm-hmm.
Syria were like, well, we'll go and have a look.
Yeah.
So they sent an ambassador to go and have a look, and they were like, no, there's none there. Like, they're not doing anything.
Okay.
And then Egypt were like, well, yeah, but they might be. So according to our agreement that we have with each other, they have like a
defense. Yeah.
We're going to amass troops and we're going to get ready to invade.
Yeah.
And then Israel.
Invade or defend?
No, we're going to invade.
Okay.
And then Israel preemptively attacks.
Yeah.
The air force of Egypt. And that's the first strike.
Kicked off. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But it's all kind of messy too, because who was doing what? Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah.
Trying to look into it, I couldn't really
tell
who was telling the truth.
I feel like it blurs like the bigger takeaways too, if you start to like look too much like too into the like the minutiae of how it started and like basically it was a victory for Israel.
So Egypt were woefully underprepared for it. I don't know exactly what they were thinking.
Well, considering they've lost the first and the second one at this point, I'm like, come on guys. Do your homework.
Like I understand that they want to get back things that they lost.
They just want Sinai Peninsula,
And they didn't like Israel for those things. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
But they also, like, in the time period up until 1967, Israel obviously knowing that they are the enemy of every other country in this area.
Have
been building everything they can to defend themselves.
Yeah. They're pretty good at it by this stage.
Basically, the
country's 20 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Egypt are woefully outgunned.
Yeah.
By this point.
Yeah.
Within a couple of days, it's clear that Egypt are not going to do anything here.
Game over.
The takeaway from it was they capture the West Bank.
Yeah.
They capture Gaza.
Yeah.
They keep the Sinai Peninsula.
Yeah.
And they capture the Golan Heights.
Yeah. And East Jerusalem. Yeah. So 67 is the big war for them where they really, really expanded into the Middle East, got all of this territory, and now they are the occupiers by this stage. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it moves us on to the Yom Kippur War, which was only 6 years later, the Fourth Arab-Israeli War, again, also known as the Ramadan War or the October War, depending on your perspective on the issue.
Yep.
This is where, you know, you've really got America backing Israel. You've got the Soviet Union backing Egypt. A surprise attack again. They attacked on Yom Kippur, holy day.
Yes.
Israel wasn't expecting it. Although, like I did read, there were meetings because at this stage the Israeli Prime Minister is Golda Meir, and they were trying to convince her to launch a preemptive strike again on Egypt, and she didn't. And the reason that she didn't was that America had sort of said to Henry Kissinger in no uncertain terms, "You are not to be the aggressor," and that had Israel been the aggressor in this war, they would have lost American support.
Right. Yeah.
And
she
decided, like, look, obviously it's not ideal to be on the back foot, but it's really not ideal to lose American support. So, I thought that was really interesting. But basically, what Egypt hoped to achieve with this war was just to gain a foothold on the eastern bank of the Suez in order to try and negotiate a return of the Sinai Peninsula.
Yeah.
But this was an Israeli victory as well.
Yeah.
So
but
that's four from four.
But it does lead to
negotiations
and famously the Camp David Accords begin after this, right?
Yes.
Which,
so what is a Camp David?
What's a Camp David? So, all right, well, briefly, Camp David is the retreat for the President of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And
I learned that from the West Wing. No, I'm joking. I knew that before.
And so, yeah, the Camp David Accords are very much so, yeah, they bring the Egyptian president, the Israeli prime minister to Camp David to sort it all out, essentially.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Carter is the president.
Yeah.
And
is it Nasser, President Nasser for
president,
Egypt?
No, it's President Anwar Sadat.
Oh, Sadat, Anwar Sadat. Nasser nationalized the Suez.
Yes.
I'm getting my Egyptian presidents confused.
It's easy to do. Easy to do.
What's Tutankhamun there? No.
And it's a framework for peace in the Middle East, which is also dealing with the Palestinian territories as well.
Yes.
And after they sign the framework that kind of talks about, you know, Egypt and Israel, you know, stopping their fighting and agreeing to like some certain terms there.
Yeah.
It also talks about giving Palestine certain
a little bit of say over what they're doing. Yeah.
And they actually get the Nobel Peace Prize for it as
all of them, don't they?
The two of them. Carter doesn't get it.
Oh, I thought Carter got it too. No. Okay. Yeah, like so incredibly successful at brokering a peace between Egypt and Israel. But, yeah, like in terms of furthering the issues for Palestine, self-determination and self-governance, it wasn't really resolved.
No.
But from 79 onwards, like Egypt and Israel are kind of cool with each other. For like
a
you
long
know,
while,
quite a while.
Yep. So it kind of does
things simmer down a little bit.
It settles stuff down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, like another sort of overarching theme when I was doing this reading was that it's about Israel with their neighbors, and then it becomes about Israel with Palestine.
Yes.
And from the late 70s, early 80s with the neighbors, things kind of settle down a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
But that's when things start kicking up with the Palestinians.
Yeah. So from 87, we get the first intifada.
The first intifada. I remember learning about this at school, and I don't know why it stands out so clearly in my mind other than I had a brilliant teacher. But I guess like what she said was, you know, it's 20 years exactly after the Six-Day War.
Yep.
So basically what you have is 20-year-olds who've known nothing but Israeli occupation.
Mm.
And like, yeah, the 20-year-old men, they're angry.
Yes.
And so that's where it all sort of starts to kick off.
Yes.
So we've had we'll just like pause and talk about the PLO briefly. Like, so the PLO is the Palestinian Liberation Organization. It had occurred or started in the 60s.
Yes.
As really like trying to become the authority for the Palestinian people and kind of like the quasi government for the Palestinian people. Now, in November 1988, so the Intifada goes for about 6 years-ish.
Yeah, thereabouts,
So in November 1988, what we've got is the PLO declaring the State of Israel and acknowledging the right for the State of Israel to exist. You've got Israel acknowledging that the PLO act for the Palestinian people. You've got the PLO – this is where basically Palestine – becomes a country-ish, like they're recognized by about 138 of 193 UN member states and they have non-member observer status in the UN. So if you look at like Palestine as a country, they say that it began in 1988 sort of in the wake of this first intifada.
So I guess it's and the PLO get involved in the intifada they don't actually like come in until a little bit after it started then say, hey, we'd like to lead you.
Yes. Yeah. They're not supportive of violence as a means of achieving their methods.
No, and they'd had some trouble early on with militant wings of the PLO. Trying to kick things off too.
Yes. They've just come to accept that diplomacy is probably the best way of achieving their objectives. And so reluctant to sort of tie themselves to violent sort of terrorist sort of activities and groups.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, when you think PLO in this period of time, it's Yasser Arafat.
Yeah, well, he was the leader from the 60s, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. Until his death in 2004.
Yeah.
So, yes, after the first intifada, we have the Oslo Accords.
Yes.
Which is where we start to see a bit of again, it depends on your perspective, but some positive outcomes for the Arab-Israeli conflict and sort of at least the perception that things are moving forward.
Yeah, because during the Oslo Accords, there's a push to get self-governing authorities to be established.
Yes,
in Palestine, right? So, now I've lost myself.
That's all right. We've got the Palestinians govern themselves in West Bank and Gaza. There's mutual recognition of the Palestinian Authority and the Israeli government. So the PLO, this is where the PLO recognizes Israel, and Israel recognizes the PLO. Yep.
Yes.
And again, it's a turn towards diplomatic resolution of the conflict as opposed to what had been happening previously.
Yes.
And then we've got the Oslo II Accords in 95, which just expands on that first agreement. And what that does is mandate the complete withdrawal of Israel from 6 cities and 450 towns in the West Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And things seem to be developing positively in the wake of these sort of agreements. And this is where you see the photo of Clinton with Yasser Arafat and, I can never remember the prime minister's name at the time. Fact check me. Yeah, who is he? There he is. Yitzhak Rabin.
Rabin.
Yeah, that's thank you, James. It's a famous photo of.
It is a famous photo. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, so like while some good things do come out of it and the process is ongoing for like 7 years, eventually at the end of it, things start to break down.
Yes.
And the US they really try and save the day and like try and get, they bring them together to Camp David again in the year 2000.
Yes.
And they're like, guys, come on, please. Yes. We've got to try and.
Clinton's like, this is my legacy.
Yeah. We've got to try and like, you know, do this before I'm out of office. And like, you know, he's really trying to make a mark.
Yeah.
But it fails.
Yes. And there are several reasons for why it fails, I think. From 2000 to 2005, you've got the second intifada. This is where Israel starts building that barrier wall around the West Bank.
Yep.
But what you see around this same time is the rise of Hamas. And Hamas is like the central player in the current conflict. And they sort of started to rise to prominence. Their roots come from the 1970s. They started as a charity clinic schools in the West Bank and Gaza in the wake of the 1967 conflict. And and I mean, I when I was reading that, I got it from Al Jazeera and I was like, oh, is this just like a happy, positive spin on what Hamas was? And I went and did some more reading. And no, that is actually how they started. So it was formally established by Sheikh Ahmed Yassin.
Mm-hmm.
He was a quadriplegic, really interesting guy. Okay, yeah, really interesting guy. That is how it started. However, they have always been Islamist. And part of their philosophy is that the problem with these groups is Fatah in particular, which is Yasser Arafat's political group. They're not Muslim enough. And so they are the ones who they obviously get radicalized from their roots in the 1970s. Their philosophy is that they are only going to achieve their means through jihad, holy war.
Yep.
However, they're not like other Islamist groups like Al-Qaeda or ISIS in that Hang on. I was like, why are they not as bad as those guys? Oh, they were different to that in that they want to establish the state. Like it's not about it's, destruction of well, it's Western more about the, culture. Yeah,
they're more about it's almost like they're a civil war
yeah,
group
yeah,
rather yeah. than an international, like yeah. let's destroy the West yes, kind of group.
That's Yeah. So, but yeah, similar means. It was interesting though that their rise in radicalism came as a result of what Israel did and a few mistakes that Israel made in dealing with them. So, so it goes back to like even in 1992, they kidnapped and killed an Israeli policeman just as part of what was happening with the escalation of conflict sort of around that time. Mm-hmm. And Israel's response to that was to deport 415 Hamas activists from Gaza and West Bank. Yeah. I think they were deposited in Lebanon.
Right.
But like the reason that was a mistake is that it turned international attention to Hamas. Mm. These people had never really left Gaza or West Bank. They didn't have that. And that's another reason they were different to Al-Qaeda and ISIS. They didn't have like this international view of the world and they they'd never traveled. And so anyway, they're starting to go out. International media groups interview them and they start to get, you know, and they're quite persuasive and interesting. Mm-hmm. They became like a cause célèbre for the Hamas cause. And then they met up with Hezbollah. And Hezbollah are the group in Lebanon. They introduced them to suicide terrorism, car bombs, and more violent ways of resistance. So until that point, Hamas had not been nearly as violent as they are today.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So I just thought that was really interesting.
That is interesting. Mm. I did not see that. That's,
yeah, I did a little deep dive into Hamas.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So we've just left the Oslo peace process.
Yes.
And at the breakdown at Camp David, the second intifada happens in the year 2000. And that is declared by a group called Al-Aqsa. Mm-hmm. And if you are unaware, so the Al-Aqsa Mosque is the one on the Temple Mount.
The really important one.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, yes. And
didn't the Prime Minister of Israel
Ariel Sharon
visited and that
so
was.
So he becomes the new Prime Minister after the Camp David Accords.
Yes.
And he goes to the Temple Mount and he declares that it will be Jewish forever.
Oof.
Which obviously just upset not a few people.
Culturally sensitive. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that the second intifada starts there.
Yeah. You've also got the death of Yasser Arafat in 2004.
Yes.
Which kind of leaves a bit of a power vacuum.
It does leave a power vacuum. Mm. And around this time too, so like this is sort of like, so then lots of sort of terrorist actions are happening, like what we would class as terrorist acts. So the car bombings and those types of things start happening a lot during this time period.
Yeah.
Because of that second intifada, we have the Saudi Arabians try a peace solution during this time period too. In 2002, they try and get the Arab League to come up with a solution.
Yep.
And they have a plan for a two-state solution. Mm-hmm. They think it looks really good. They think that Israel are like, well, maybe we could convince them.
Yeah.
But then it comes out that the Americans find out that actually Saudi Arabia have been funding Hamas the whole time.
Yes.
And so
it breaks down.
It breaks down immediately after that.
Yeah. What do you think about that? Like, you know, is it fair enough? It's like Saudi Arabia have been funding Hamas. We deem Hamas to be a terrorist organization because they use car bombs and suicide bombers. Therefore, we're not even going to entertain the idea of the solution that you propose.
I mean,
asking the tough questions.
It is a tough question.
Legitimately.
I would be angry if I found out that and I was like, have you been doing this in good faith or not? Like, do you want my trust or not?
Yes. They're a power player. So like, should you not just have a seat at the table so that we can talk about it?
Yeah. I mean, you might want to engage and see what they offer and then be like, actually, no, we don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
But do that with all of the information.
Yeah. You know. I think sometimes international relations can be like children fighting. Yes. As a teacher,
yeah.
you see a lot where it's like you throw your cookies off the table because, you know, someone has done something and you don't like it and like, well, now we're just not going to engage.
Yes. Like, yeah. And nothing gets resolved when that's the case.
It's like when a teenager tells you, don't worry about it.
Yeah. But I have to, it's my job.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah. then I had, in 2005, we get disengagement.
Yeah.
Do you have stuff on that? So Ariel Sharon is Prime Minister still, and they start instigating the evacuation of settlements in the West Bank and Gaza in 2005.
The other thing that happens in 2005 is that Hamas starts entering politics.
And so this was all to do with the Oslo Accords and the establishment of a self-governing authority to have elections in Palestine. And so one of the agreements was, well, we'll give you some space. Mm-hmm. We'll move their settlements out.
Yeah.
You can have elections.
Yeah.
And then there might be, you know, maybe we can talk with an actual government.
Yes.
Right. So that was the idea was, if you have a proper government for us to negotiate with.
We'll negotiate.
We'll negotiate.
Yeah.
That's kind of the vibe I get from all the reading that I did. Yeah. It was a bit more complex than that, but that's kind of the,
The gist of it.
The gist of it.
Yeah.
The problem was Hamas were.
Yes. Well, so like the Fatah and Yasser Arafat were the first ones that were in charge. But then, what you've got is from 2005, Hamas entering the political competition there and becoming quite popular because over this time with the Oslo Accords, there was a lot of frustration, Palestinian frustration with Fatah because they were negotiating with Israel and they were making concessions in order to move the process along. And, your average Palestinian person was not happy with that. Mm. And so what you see a radicalization of like your average Palestinian person there and a growth in the popularity of Hamas because they are more actively dealing with the issue.
Yes.
Is maybe a nicer way of putting it. I've also got some perspective here from a man called Martin Keir. He's an Australian lecturer. Also, you've got Kifatah people, they weren't living in Palestine. They were often living in exile and they were living quite wealthy, affluent lives. They weren't suffering the everyday privations of life in occupied West Bank and Gaza and so didn't feel connected. Well, the average Palestinian people did not feel connected with those Fatah leaders and hence turned to Hamas instead.
Yes.
So it's just, some explanation for the growth in popularity there.
Yeah.
And they win.
They do, which then means that all those ideas of negotiation break down because Hamas are deemed a terrorist organization.
Yes, the US and the EU didn't acknowledge the victory. And then you've got factionalism and fighting between Hamas and Fatah.
Yeah.
And they don't enter a unity government until 2014. So, from the mid-2000s to 2014, you've got infighting.
Yeah.
Mm.
And am I right? I didn't actually look. Am I right? There hasn't been an election since. Am I right?
Probably. I'm thinking once Hamas gets power, they go, we're
in power. I'm pretty sure that's right.
Fact check us, James.
I'm pretty sure that's right. I don't think they hold elections again after that.
Yeah.
I
mean, that checks out.
Yeah.
Or if they do, they'll be rigged.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You've got from 2014 a unity government, but there's violence, there's tension, there's short confrontations, and then it only lasts for about 4 years to 2018, where you've got Fatah controlling the West Bank and you've got de facto rule of Gaza by Hamas.
Yeah.
So it gets really complicated again.
It does.
And on the other hand there, you've got Benjamin Netanyahu's Likud party in power in Israel, and it's the most far-right religious government in Israel's history.
Yeah, yeah.
Who are famously good at dealing with situations like this.
Yeah.
So
Sorry.
That was sarcasm, that, guys. Some people don't get that. when I speak.
Gosh.
Yes.
So look, I from there until like even until like 2020, there's just like it's much and much of the same of just like
short little like Hamas attacks on the border.
Israel being like, we're not negotiating with anyone at the moment. Like, we're just not engaging with you at all.
Yeah.
Like, and that's kind of been the status quo that whole time.
Israel is backed by America. America are giving them bombs. So every little, like Hamas, literally Hamas throw rocks at the border and Israel retaliates with rockets. The death toll is always very disproportionate.
Yep.
Which I think really brings us up to October last year with Hamas's very, very surprising. Unless there's something you want to talk about.
I might just quickly jump in because did you look at the Abraham Accords at all?
I didn't, no.
Okay, so Donald Trump.
Yes.
Probably one of the only things he ever did that was not too terrible. Bad. Although he also wildly overstates how good it is.
Yes. Yes.
So he negotiates the Abraham Accords, which was a bilateral agreement between Israel and the UAE, and Israel and Bahrain about Palestine.
Mm.
So not even including the Palestinians in the matter.
Right, yeah.
What he was hoping to do was get, this is Trump, what he was hoping to do was get a bunch of the smaller Arab states to get together and be like, here's a solution.
Yeah.
Get Israel to sign up with all of them bilaterally.
Yeah.
And then normalize relations in the region by having small bilateral agreements.
Yeah. I did read a little bit about Trump and what Trump was doing in Israel and I remember being confronted by the feeling of like, I don't hate this. And so like, you know, it was the stuff that he was doing did seem to be.
There was some progressive. Of it was okay. Like the idea of it was maybe okay, but it was really never going to work without direct acknowledgement of a two-state solution at all.
Yeah.
He thought, or at least he claims, that it could have happened, but I think it fell apart with did it fall apart with Saudi Arabia? I think he tried to get Saudi Arabia on board and then it fell apart with them and then that was it. Like it was never going to be anything that was of any significance after that.
Yeah.
I mean, that happens.
Worth mentioning.
I mean, I just thought because, I mean, you know, if he becomes president again.
Well, yeah, there are lots of parts of the world where.
You wonder
where
what might happen now after we have, you know, now that we are in a declared civil war.
Yes. Yeah. So we've still got America backing the US, but taking more of a tone of you need to settle down a little bit. Do you think that's fair or?
Yeah, I think at first it was very much.
Yes,
we definitely stand by it. Like it was.
Well, and I think most people, because Hamas attacked Israel.
It was an unprovoked attack.
Yes, killed over 1,000 civilians and took hostages. And so it was.
Including Palestinians.
Yeah, yeah. It was surprising. It was confronting. But since then you've had.
I think the way that Israel have dealt with it since then has meant America can't blindly back them like they have done.
Yeah. However, they're still providing bombs and weapons.
Yeah, I think so. The current conflict is messy.
Yes.
I think the thing that I'm most interested in at the minute is the online venom that I see for both sides.
Yeah.
That I'm like, well, are we ever going to agree on anything? Can we ever come to any sort of middle ground? Because it's just so, it's become so like you've got to stand for one of them.
One
you can't,
side or the other. Yeah.
You can't find a middle ground anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of those, there just appears to be no end in sight to what's happening at the moment.
No,
Yeah.
I think Biden is definitely trying to get Netanyahu to Like, you got to calm down, mate.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But, we can't be killing children.
No. But a two-state solution seems further away than ever at this point.
Oh, for sure. So, it does seem like that.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Well,
I guess, yeah.
That's how it came to this.
As always, you can catch us by email, howdiditcometothis@podcast.gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Facebook at HDICTTpodcast. If you like the show, it's great if you leave us a review or even some correspondence. We might read it out on air. How Did It Come to This is written by Daniel Matters and Siobhan Doherty. Our producer is James Tuckwell, edited by Daniel Matters. Original music by Lachlan McWhirter.
Huh?
Yeah, I don't like saying X. What's X?
What's X?
Elon Musk.
Oh, James is still here.
You idiot.
Hello.
Hello. Sorry, I'll put my headphones back on. There we go.
CIA.
Ooh, look at that.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
That's Soviet cool.
Break with Israel. Hey. With, that's so cool. Completely provoked.
This kind of like, it feels a bit like what you guys were asking before.
Yeah. So when's this from? Is there a date?
I can get a date for you probably, but not this stage. It's like CIA.gov. I hacked into the mainframe, you guys.
You better be careful there, Julian. They'll come and get ya.
Oh my goodness.
It was unclassified in 2005, but I don't know when it's actually.
It's probably from the 50s or something.
Definitely looks like it could be. Looks like it was on a typewriter. There you go.
Or are they doing that to distract us?
Not secret anymore. They crossed it out. That means it's not good.
Oh, good. Not secret.
Yeah, okay. So, when it became evident that Israel was predominantly influenced by the West, Moscow gradually withdrew its support. Yeah, so it was totally ideological.
So it's just because, it's just like you guys are on their side, so I'll be on these guys' side.
Yeah.
These guys have oil.
Like I said, I told you. Yeah. They're just, countries are just teenagers.
Yeah. Seriously.
The Russian supported Israel for a bit.
Yeah.
Briefly.
For like 2 years.
Yeah.
But then they go fight the Arabs.
Well, they go fight the Arabs in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is that's totally different.
Which is, yeah.
And then Rambo.
Rambo
fights with all those lovely Mujahideen fighters that he dedicates the movie to, the heroic fighters, the Mujahideen.
I think it's like stingers in that movie. Take down the Russian Hind.
Yep. Incredible. Yep, incredible. Yep.
Wow. I realized
friendship ended with Aramis.
Yep. Yep.
Missed the whole Trump relating the embassy. Is that like, I don't know, is it relevant? Is it worth mentioning? No, he did that.
You know, I think we covered a lot. I think it's okay.
We did all right?
Yeah, I think we did.
Okay.
What do you think, James? Was it all right?
Was it okay?
I reckon. Because it's like, it started like how long ago? Like 3000 BCE?
Well, that was last yeah. episode. Yep. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you went from there all the way to like, what the...
To why... Why it started now.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's pretty much how it came to this, I think.
I think so.
And it's so complicated.
I got to get home.
Yeah. Children and whatnot.
Yep.
Thanks for joining us, James. It's good that it, like, how logistically hard is that for you to get home by this time?
Usually not too bad.
Mm.
But, yeah, we had the, like, a real education thing.
Yeah,
right.
I had to talk to Adam for a bit.
Yep.
Oh, you be okay.
Must have been pleasant for you.
You know what we haven't had
what?
In two episodes is any fun facts. So well, no, we need to do a billion fun facts next episode.
Yeah.
Right, cool.
Yeah,
I feel like
we're gonna do the whole Kate Middleton thing. We're gonna do conspiracy theories.
About the royals?
No, just generally. In general, like our favorite historical conspiracy theories.
We'll start with Kate.
We're gonna do our favorite conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
And then I want to talk about conspiracy theories that actually turned out to be true.
Yeah. I can load us up with heaps of fun facts. Yeah.
And then, it'd be a waste to ask now what your favorite is because you want to talk about my show now.
time, hey.
Yeah.
That's right.
Plus, I don't know much about conspiracy.
Siobhan has to burn up.
I have heaps of reading to do.
Jump on YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know there's no cameras, but Siobhan, can you come back next time with a tinfoil hat?
Okay, yeah. Actually, that's a good idea. We can take a photo.
Take a photo with tinfoil hats on.
Yeah,
all right, done.
Yeah.
Like, guys, guess what?
Conspiracy theories.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Flat earthers.
Apparently, you know Dr. Elhart?
Yeah.
Apparently, he's a flat earther.
He's a flat earther. No way.
Who's Dr. Elhart?
Are you serious? No. He was a teacher at Robbo.
Oh.
Science teacher.
Oh.
Science teacher.
And he's a flat earther.
What?
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Public education, man.
That is ridiculous.
So good.
Alrighty, I'll catch you.
All right. See you, mate. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Missed ya.
Bye.
All right. I'm going to leave the crap here.
Yeah, lock it. Easy. Yeah, I think we're all right.